Welcome to Living in the New Covenant, a weekly podcast from In-Depth Studies that normally looks at various issues that believers face from a New Covenant theology perspective. Today and next time, we're going to do something a little different. At our church, New Covenant Bible Fellowship, we have been going through the book of Deuteronomy for quite some time. We're about to finish it, and because of situation things with coronavirus and such, we're unable to meet on a regular Sunday gathering. So we thought it might be kind of fun and at the same time a service to our family of believers, and that's to record these last two chapters. So I'm here with Jeff Volker, and Jeff is going to lead us through Deuteronomy 33 today, and next week it'll be Deuteronomy 34 to finish up the book. If you have any questions or anything, I'll leave some information at the end of this on how you can contact us. So just sit back, pretend you're at church with us, and we'll get started. So Jeff, what do you want to say about Deuteronomy 33?
Well, probably the folks of our own fellowship would probably say this has been going on for quite some time. And they're probably quite relieved that the end is in sight. But it's been a fascinating study, Deuteronomy. And the reason we went into this to do the book of Deuteronomy is from a New Covenant theology perspective, we wanted to help the folks sort of understand how do we handle the Old Testament, how do we handle Old Testament history, law, everything. And Deuteronomy is a great book for that. So I've thoroughly enjoyed going through it, and I think it's been very instructive. So, but here we are in chapter 33. There's 34 chapters, and this is the chapter where Moses blesses the tribes of Israel. Okay, now, what I want to do first, just read the first five verses. Now, in this chapter, there are 29 verses, and we're going to be covering them all. You'll see we can do some of them quite quickly, but it's more the introduction that we're going to spend more time on. So let me read from the NIV the first five verses. This is the blessing that Moses, the man of God, pronounced on the Israelites before his death. He said, "The Lord came from Sinai and dawned over them from Seir. He shone forth from Mount Paran. He came with myriads of holy ones from the south, from his mountain slopes. Surely it is you who love the people. All the holy ones are in your hand. At your feet they all bow down, and from you receive instruction, the law that Moses gave us, the possession of the assembly of Jacob. He was the king over Jeshurun," which is another word for Israel, "when the leaders of the people assembled along with the tribes of Israel." So let's stop there. What this is doing, he's just describing in very positive terms how the Lord gathered Israel as a people. And it says he came down from Mount Sinai, and then it seems it says he dawned over them from Seir. That would be the Edomites, Esau's descendants. That's heading up toward the promised land. And then they enter in, then he talks about he shone forth from Mount, Paran, which once again, it's that era, but it's Israel heading toward the promised land. But the whole point that I want to sort of discuss today is that this is a very positive chapter of God regarding Israel speaking through Moses. Now, what makes this so strange? Because previously, we have read in chapter 32, which is a lengthy chapter about the Song of Moses, which is a brutal prophetic statement about what Israel is going to always go astray. They're never going to, be good at all. So when you get to chapter 32, Israel is that temporary unbelieving picture of the people of God. That seems so simple. But when we get to 33, it is very, very positive. And even these first five verses, before now we get to the blessing of each of the tribes of Israel, it's all positive. It's all positive. We would say it's all gracious. Now, we do have to differentiate, which we will, the God being gracious to Israel versus the covenant he made with Israel, the old covenant. Those are two different things. The old covenant we'll talk about, we will talk as a works covenant that Israel can, that they cannot keep because they have to be they have to perfectly obey the Mosaic law. Therefore, they're always under the wrath of God for their law breaking. But this focuses in on how gracious God has been to Israel. So when we talk about that, let's switch over to the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 5, beginning at verse 43. This is the section on the Sermon on the Mount where at least the NIV entitles this little section, Love Your Enemies. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Okay. Now, what does this mean? Well, we're talking about what we call sort of common grace. That is, when we ask the question, does God love everyone? The answer is, well, yes and no. In one way, yes. In another way, no. So what we mean is that those who are never going to believe, we would call those the reprobates. God even loves them in a limited, temporary sort of way. It's not salvation. It's not eternal love, but it's a limited love. Israel would fall under this category. Whereas believers experience God's love to the full, let's say Romans 8:28, all things work together for good to those who love God, who are called according to his purpose. Well, that's only applies to believers. And so they have the fullness of his love, and it's eternal, it never ends. They have eternal life with him. So you have the love of God being sort of viewed in two different ways, the unbeliever, the believer. Well, here it would seem that we are encountering God showing Israel, which is an unbelieving people, except for a small remnant of believers, he's showing them, he's being how much he cares for them. So that's kind of fascinating, especially since it follows right after chapter 32, where it is a brutal chapter, the Song of Moses, that they are supposed to memorize and recite. And, you know, we would say that's a bummer of a thing to recite. So that being the case, let's walk through. Well, before I do that, there's one more thing I want to go, just to sort of remind you of something that we have dealt with before. In 2 Corinthians chapter 3, you have, beginning at verse 7, and this is where we just want to make sure everybody's clear about this. It talks about the ministry of the old covenant, and they do it through the lens of the Ten Commandments, because the Ten Commandments are called the tablets of the covenant, and they are the summary of the requirements of the covenant, which is you have to obey the Mosaic law perfectly or God curses you. But notice how the old covenant is described, verse 7. Now, if the ministry that brought death, which was engraved in letters on stone, came with glory, so that the Israelites could not look steadily at the face of Moses because of its glory, transitory though it was, will not the ministry of the Spirit be even more glorious? Verse 9, if the ministry that brought condemnation was glorious, and that's the old covenant, how much more glorious is the ministry that brings righteousness? And of course, here he's comparing, contrasting the ministry of the old covenant to the new covenant. And so when we read Deuteronomy 33, we want to be crystal clear. You must distinguish between the love God shows to Israel, that is, he is being gracious to them because they're unbelievers, and the covenant itself, which is a ministry of condemnation, ministry of death, because it demands perfect obedience to the Mosaic law, or God curses you. Okay, so here that's sort of the bigger picture of what's going on. And so here, so we are focusing on really the graciousness of God toward Israel. So let's begin to walk through, and this is, and I admit this is somewhat repetitive. So we're not going to spend a lot of time on each individual blessing of the tribes. And you'll see what I mean. So verse 6 begins, "Let Reuben live and not die, nor his people be few." Well, Reuben, and we can talk about that in Genesis 35, verse 22, Reuben, you know, he had sex with his father's concubines. And so therefore, woe with Jacob's concubines. Therefore, he's now being relegated to, you know, the position of Avis, number two. And so it's as though Reuben's, you know, the tribe is going to be somewhat judged because of this. So they say the blessing is, let Reuben live and not die, nor his people be few. So do not extinguish him, you know, that he would actually grow. Because the idea would seem historically that Reuben is now, you know, not a favorite because of what he did. And then you go to chapter 7. In verse 7, he says, "And this he said about Judah. Hear, Lord, the cry of Judah. Bring him to his people. With his own hands he defends his cause. Oh, be his help against his foe." And of course, the kings come out of Judah, King David. But once again, it's just saying that Judah, to some degree, is going to be the defender. Okay, once again, we don't have the details, but it's only positive. This is a blessing. It's only positive. Verse 8, about Levi, the tribe of Levi, he said, "Your Thummim and Urim belong to your faithful servant. You tested him at Massah. You contended with him at the waters of Meribah. He said of his father and mother, 'I have no regard for them.' He did not recognize his brothers or acknowledge his own children, but he watched over your word and guarded your covenant. He teaches your precepts to Jacob and your law to Israel. He offers incense before you, the whole burnt offerings on your altar. Bless all his skills, Lord. Be pleased with the work of his hands. Strike down those who rise up against him, his foes, till they rise no more." Now, this is almost the longest section as far as blessing to a tribe. Let's dissect it a little bit, because from the tribe of Levi comes the priests, of course, you know, the family of Aaron, the males 30 to 50 years old. And the priests, at least one, the high priest, would have this garment called an ephod. And within that, there is the Thummim and Urim. Now, we're not really crystal clear about what that was, but it was some sort of, maybe the equivalent of casting lots, dice. That's what we think of. But there is some way of that you could get sort of a yes or no answer. Mm-hmm. And God actually controlled that. So it was sort of a shortcut to get a word from God. Okay, but whatever. But that's because they were the tribe of Levi, and the priesthood comes from them. Now, I stuck this. There is something on the notes. In Exodus 32, so let's read that. Just flip back to Exodus 32. This is an account where it's significant for the Levites. And we're going to begin at verse 25 to 28. And this is the account of the golden calf when Moses went up on Mount Sinai and he's given the Ten Commandments, Mosaic Law, and he comes down. The people are worshiping the golden calf that Aaron made, and they're just going crazy. So verse 25 says this, "Moses saw that the people were running wild and that Aaron had let them get out of control and so became a laughingstock to their enemies. So he stood at the entrance to the camp and said, "Whoever is for the Lord, come to me." And all the Levites rallied to him. Then he said to them, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Each man strap a sword to his side, go back and forth through the camp from one end to the other, each killing his brother and friend and neighbor." The Levites did as Moses commanded, and that day about 3,000 of the people died. Then Moses said, "You have been set apart to the Lord today, for you were against your own sons and brothers, and he has blessed you this day." So now, by the way, that's the origin of the reason why tribe of Levi is set apart to minister to the tabernacle and then the temple, and why they were given this special status with God. This is it, because in this difficult situation, they were the ones that stood faithful to the Lord. Which, and that's why it'll say something, the idea, he said to his father and mother, "I have no regard for them." That is, Levi did not put, friendship or even family above being faithful to the Lord. And that's what he's trying to get. And of course, from them, the Levites, you have the priests, they taught the people, etc. So that's really, we're given more detail here with the tribe of Levi than we are given with most every other tribe. But once again, it's a blessing. You've been faithful, and God is acknowledging that. Okay, so, but remember, we have to think of that in terms of the backdrop of chapter 32. So we're not saying tribe of Levi were a bunch of believers. No. We're saying that they did, at least at that point in Exodus 32, when there was the golden calf, that they stood by the Lord at that point. But of course, historically, they went bad, just like all the rest of Israel. So now let's move down a little farther. About Benjamin, he said, "Let the beloved of the Lord rest secure in him, for he shields him all day long, and the one the Lord loves rests between his shoulders." This is simply saying God loves Benjamin, in some unique way. Once again, remember, this is the love that God shows unbelievers, not unlike the love God shows Israel in comparison to the rest of the nations. Because the rest of the nations, Israel's unbelieving, and so are the rest of the nations, but Israel experienced a form of his love that even the rest of the nations did not experience. Wasn't salvation except for a very small remnant, and it wasn't eternal, because now we have a spiritual Israel that's mostly Gentiles, little bit of Jews, but once again, but God showed love in a defined sense regarding Israel. And here in the blessing of the tribes, when he gets to Benjamin, he expresses that this was in some sense, this tribe was special. That's about all we can say. Very limited. And then you get to beginning at verse 10. It says about Joseph, tribe of Joseph, he said, "May the Lord bless his land with the precious dew from heaven above and with the deep waters that lie below, with the best the sun brings forth and the finest the moon can yield, with the choicest gifts of the ancient mountains and the fruitfulness of the everlasting hills, with the best gifts of the earth and its fullness and the favor of him who dwelt in the burning bush. Let all these rest on the head of Joseph, on the brow of the prince among his brothers. In majesty he is like a firstborn bull. His horns are the horns of a wild ox. With them he will gore the nations, even those at the ends of the earth. Such are the 10,000s of Ephraim. Such are the thousands of Manasseh." Now, all this is that Joseph, the tribe of Joseph, is going to experience fruitfulness. You know, and to what degree, how's it going to work, we don't know. But they are going to experience that in comparison to the rest of the tribes. And then at the very end, it says, "Such are the 10,000s of Ephraim, such are the thousands of Manasseh." Manasseh is actually the firstborn, but Ephraim is now viewed in actually in Jeremiah chapter 31, verse 9. It says that Ephraim is now the firstborn, meaning he gets raised up above Manasseh. And Ephraim now has a prominent place, and especially the northern kingdom of Israel. When it was, the kingdom of Israel was divided, Ephraim now has the prominent place in the plan. Okay, but that's all we know. So it's just fruitfulness for Joseph, the tribe of Joseph. Then verse 18 about Zebulun, he said, "Rejoice, Zebulun, in your going out." And you, okay. And then it quickly says, stop there. And then it says, "And you, Issachar, in your tents, they will summon peoples to the mountain and there offer the sacrifices of the righteous. They will feast on the abundance of the seas, on the treasures hidden in the sand." And of course, so he just says about Zebulun that very, very, you know, it's very little. I mean, it's so brief. You don't know what to say. All you can say is it's an encouraging word. Mm-hmm. And then you get the Issachar, once again, positive words. And their southern, you know, their southern shores was the Sea of Galilee. So they were by the waters, but they're being, once again, they're being blessed in some undefinable way. Verse 20, about Gad, he said, "Blessed is he who enlarges God's domain. Gad lives there like a lion, tearing at arm or head. He chose the best land for himself. The leader's portion was kept for him. When the heads of the people assembled, he carried out the Lord's righteous will and his judgments concerning Israel." Now, so Gad is going to have some sort of leadership, okay, among the tribes of Israel. That's fine. But once again, Gad is going to be located up north. And we know that that when the nation of Israel was divided after Solomon died, when Rehoboam was king, and it was divided 10 tribes up north, 2 in the south, Gad is up north. And we know that the northern kingdom went bad right away. And it stayed bad till they were destroyed by the Assyrians in 722 BC. But within that, the tribe of Gad experience some sort of blessing. And then verse 22, about Dan, he said, "Dan is a lion's cub springing out of Bashan." And that's like a lion springing out of an ambush. Well, okay, maybe... Maybe they had military prowess. We don't know. But once again, it's very brief, just a sentence, but it's positive. Everything is positive. And then you get verse 23 about Naphtali, he said. "Naphtali is abounding with the favor of the Lord and is full of his blessing. He will inherit southward to the lake." And Naphtali's southern border is the Sea of Galilee or the Lake of Gennesaret. And once again, he's abounding with the favor of the Lord and is full of his blessing. We don't know to what degree. But once again, what we're saying is that even though Israel as a whole is unbelieving, always going astray, that within their history, they're still experiencing the love of God, you know, in a temporary, limited sense. Verse 24, about Asher, he said, "Most blessed of the sons is Asher. Let him be favored by his brothers, and let him bathe his feet in oil. The bolts of your gates will be iron and bronze, and your strength will equal your days. There's no one like the God of..." Oh, stop right there, because that's the... once again, Asher is just favored. We really don't... Kind of a mystery to us in what sense was he favored. We're back to that. But now we've finished with the blessing of the 12 tribes. And then from there, what Moses does, he now moves to sort of a general statement regarding Israel, beginning at verse 26. And he says this, "There is no one like the God of Jeshurun," that's like the God of Israel, "who rides across the heavens to help you and on the clouds in his majesty. The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. He will drive out your enemies before you, saying, 'Destroy them.' So Israel will live in safety. Jacob will dwell secure in the land of grain and new wine, where the heavens drop dew. Blessed are you, Israel. Who is like you, a people saved by the Lord? He is your shield and helper and your glorious sword. Your enemies will cower before you, and you will tread on their heights. Now you say, well, I mean, this is true when Joshua led the Israelites into the promised land, and they conquered the land, at least most of it. Well, that's true. The enemies could not withstand them. But we know, but once you look at the totality of Israel's history, no, they were, you know, one nation after another starts, you know, just comes through their land and makes them their servants. So, yes, he did give them this positive, especially up through Solomon. So we were talking about up through, you know, they became a nation approximately 1400 BC. And then they went up through Solomon, which was when he died, is around 900 BC. So approximately, let's say, about 500 years, things were reasonably positive, at least as a nation. Now, that we've got to remember that this includes the time of the judges, which was a low point. You know, every man did what was right in his own eyes. That's the theme. But we see that especially through David becoming king, and Solomon is an extension of that, that the Israel's sort of prominence blossomed and their influence was at its height. Okay, so this is where, let's sort of reflect on this, Paul, the idea of the significance of Israel in God's plan. Very significant. And they are, in one sense, the most blessed people in an Old Testament sense in comparison to the nations around them.
What I think about as we just went through this, and it is fascinating, that Moses is blessing them. He's saying lots of good stuff, right?
Yes, good stuff.
I'm reminded for some reason, of a wedding ceremony, where everybody makes promises and says all these wonderful things, and you send them out with a blessing, right? And how often anymore, especially nowadays, it goes bad pretty quick, right? And before you know it, there is no. It's sort of reminiscent of that. But what's interesting is leading up to this blessing is all the repeating of the law. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to, you know, and with the knowledge, if you don't, you're going to be cursed and hunted down. And it's just fascinating because, you know, I've said this to you many, many times. Why did God create this people that he really wasn't going to save and give them all those years to go out and prove how bad they could be, you know? And you kind of go, wait a minute, that makes no sense from a human standpoint, obviously. But it is all part of his plan because he needed Israel, in a sense, to ultimately reveal who he is and what he expects, but also to ultimately bring about the Messiah.
Yes.
But boy, it's just, you know, I mean, I don't think you'd get this past a director in Hollywood. They would look at this story and go, no, not going to work, right?
Well, that's why I think that this, going reading through Deuteronomy 33, yes, it's repetitive as far as each tribe, because you're just sort of general blessing stuff. But when you step back and you go, whoa, this people was blessed by God, and he was very gracious toward them at every turn, yet they are under this covenant that they couldn't keep, and they are going to be cursed. All of that is true, yet they were blessed in comparison to the nations around them. Mm-hmm. So they experienced not just, you know, what we think of as garden variety common grace, but even extra special common grace, because they were a special physical nation during the Old Covenant era. So this is good to go through this. You know, is this normally where we would hang out? Well, no, I don't think so. But it's a good reminder there's much more going on, and that you know, how God is using Israel in his plan, as you said, it is a great illustration. The Messiah comes forth. So it's, if nothing else, we come away from this saying, this is an amazing God who, even though they're under his wrath as an unbelieving people, he still blesses them in remarkable ways. And we ought not never to forget that. It shows you how amazing this God is. Right. And so that's our thoughts on Deuteronomy chapter 33. And I admit that even as I was working through this, that was kind of a very surprising chapter.
Mm. It is. We'll wrap up next time, next week, with a much shorter chapter, chapter 34. But this whole book, I mean, you had mentioned it in the beginning, walking us through, and it has been a long walk, but walking us through the book of Deuteronomy from the perspective of New Covenant theology has been fascinating. It really is, because not many New Covenant people that I know outside of our church would run to Deuteronomy to make the case for New Covenant theology.
Yeah.
It wouldn't happen. They wouldn't know how to handle it.
And yet I think this has been a great study, mm-hmm. In showing how, you know, the truths of New Covenant theology fit so biblically, are so biblical at every turn, and how they equip us to handle the Old Testament responsibly.
All right. Well, and if you've enjoyed this, or if you're more curious than you were before we started about the whole book of Deuteronomy, I would encourage you, go to our church website, which is NCBF, which stands for New Covenant Bible Fellowship, ncbf.net, N-E-T. You get to that page, on the right-hand column, you will see sermons. And there's a whole list. They're all posted on sermon audio, so they're easily accessible. But if you'd like to go back and walk through Deuteronomy as we have been doing, we hope you will. If you have questions about this little message and about what we've been talking about, you can always contact Jeff.
You can give me a call at my cell phone, 480-313-8558, or email me at volker.jeff@gmail.com. And remember, the Jeff is G-E-O-F-F, and I'll be glad to answer questions, talk about anything that, you know, that spurs you within the book of Deuteronomy.
Thanks for listening.